You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and you sense what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we speak with DJ Hyde, the man behind Combat Zone Wrestling. We're looking forward to going behind the scenes with DJ and hearing more about the challenges and excitement running this type of wrestling promotion. My name is David, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Alex. How are things going?
Things are going very, very well. Beginning Thanksgiving preparations, as I assume some of our listeners are as well.
Yeah, that's a fun time of year with Thanksgiving, and then, of course, rolling into the holiday season and the new year. So what are your plans for Thanksgiving?
We're actually heading over to San Francisco to go spend Thanksgiving with some friends of ours and having a little mini vacation out of the holiday.
Well, that sounds fun. It's a great area.
Absolutely. I've actually never been, so neither has my wife, so we're excited to see it.
Perfect. Perfect plan. Now, we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss today. Of course, we're going to have DJ Hyde here on in a few minutes. But before we get started, Alex, I thought we would hit on a few WWE topics. So should we go ahead and get started?
Yeah, let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. Alex, are you excited for Survivor Series this Sunday? It's a show built around the main event, really, the CM Punk, John Cena, and Ryback triple threat world title matchup. Do you think they've done a good job building that, and how do you feel that's going to sell the pay-per-view?
What's interesting is I actually think they've actually done a very poor job of building it. Initially, this wasn't the main event of Survivor Series. It was a traditional Survivor Series team main event, and then they switched it to the three-way match. I mean, it's not particularly a match that I think is anticipated and therefore not super interested in it.
Just the whole Ryback thing feels rushed to me because I think they've done a good job with him over the past 4 or 5 months, but now where do you go from here? We talked about this, with, of course, the last pay-per-view where he wrestled CM Punk one-on-one. I did like the way they ended that Hell in the Cell match with using the referee. And here, this seems like another way to involve him in the main event, but, CM Punk, I think, is going to retain the title. Some kind of maybe screw job finish again. It's not a great match for me. We've seen a lot of CM Punk and John Cena. So for me, it's not enough to make me buy the pay-per-view, and I don't think the rest of the card is that great either.
What's interesting is I thought they actually had a pretty good out with the finish that they did, and actually the match on Raw, I actually was looking forward to the actual Brad Maddox versus Ryback match.
Yep.
That possibly could have been a pay-per-view match that they could have done, because I think the further you keep Ryback away from the title picture currently, that's probably the better move. But exactly, because of the Survivor Series match, now the not-Survivor Series match, the Survivor Series match that they're rolling out really doesn't make much sense, and I don't think they've done a good enough job of introducing the other matches on the card.
In fact, it would have been kind of cool had they stayed with the original Survivor Series plans, and they had a quote-unquote traditional Survivor Series match kind of as the main event, like, CM Punk on one team, Ryback, another team, and kind of bringing the focus back to that format, which I always enjoyed from the original shows.
It can be better if you give yourself the ability to plan and show direction where you're going, and I don't know, this kind of fall kind of seems like a means to get to the end of January, and we'll kind of muddle through it.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And this past Monday night, we did have a very nice moment with the return of Jerry the King Lawler. Great to see him. And he looked good. I thought physically he looked real good. And that was great. However, there's been a lot of discussion this week on then what happened with CM Punk and Paul Heyman. The heart attack angle, whether that was in good taste, whether it was just to get heat. Where do you stand on what we saw from CM Punk this past Monday night?
I had a very short time I actually did wrestling. I wasn't a professional wrestler because I don't think I ever made enough money to pay for my wrestling gear. maybe 5 matches. But no, I was actually involved in an angle in Southern California, and it was a pushing the envelope type angle. And a fan actually on the SoCal and Censor message board actually voices disgust with Angle, said he didn't like it. And I actually responded to him on the message board, and I said, well, do you now want to see me get beat up by the guy I was feuding with? Because that was my full intention. And I'm a big supporter of angles that push the envelope. Mm-hmm. But as long as they lead toward, I screwed over this guy, now this guy is going to beat me up. And I felt like the water was kind of muddled. You know, he was making fun of Jerry Lawler. Mick Foley came out. What did this have to do with Ryback or John Cena? Mm-hmm. I don't think that point was ever put across. And it kind of felt like, you know, we were given this golden ticket. You know, we have the opportunity to get the fans really involved in this return of Jerry Lawler. He had a good segment in the ring with Jim Ross.
Yep.
And then we kind of turn it around. And it's funny because anytime the media, the real media, decides to show attention to professional wrestling, it's usually by showing goofy angles like this. And so you wanted to create conversation with World Wrestling Entertainment, you did it. And the next time that the media decides to cover you, this may be one of the angles they select, and you only did it to yourself.
Well, and we're not going to get a real payoff here because Jerry Lawler, I hope, doesn't get in the ring for a very long period of time. That's what I didn't like about it. Punk should be focused, like you said, on John Cena and Ryback selling Survivor Series, not kind of going backwards, picking on Jerry Lawler again. I thought it was great to see Lawler. They should have just left it at that. And I just thought it was unnecessary. It's not that I was offended by it, Alex. I just thought it was unnecessary.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember a few years ago when Jerry Lawler was involved in a feud with The Miz and Michael Cole, and Michael Cole actually made a reference to Jerry Lawler's mother who had just recently passed. And that was you know, controversial as well, but I don't think it got nearly the amount of outrage on the Internet, per se. And not only outrage on the Internet, but, I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Are you aware of this professional wrestler named Stone Cold Steve Austin? He is actually a professional wrestler. He actually voices displeasure with the angle as well. And actually the guy that Vince McMahon was going to hand his company off to in the early 90s, Jerry Jarrett, also voices displeasure with the angle. So, I mean, and also there's plenty of wrestlers backstage who I'm sure didn't appreciate the angle. Jerry Lawler apparently gave his A-okay, but that doesn't mean that it was in good taste. And even relevant to what was going on in the program, World Wrestling Entertainment had an awesome opportunity to have a feel-good moment, and they passed it up to do this stupid angle. And like I said, you know, anytime the media shows wrestling attention, they go after stuff like this, and you're giving more fuel to the fire, David.
Yeah. Now let's get to this show's special guest, DJ Hyde, owner of CZW. And here's a brief recap for those of you who don't know as much about CZW. It's Combat Zone Wrestling, and it's an independent wrestling promotion founded in 1999 when John Zandig and four of his students began to run professional wrestling shows in the New Jersey area. They showcased a brand of hardcore wrestling dubbed as Ultra Violence, which featured ladders, tables, thumbtacks, barbed wire, light tubes, and fire, a whole bunch of crazy stuff. The company filled a niche for hardcore wrestling fans that had been left open by the folding of ECW. Now, early 2000 saw CZW establish a connection with the deathmatch wrestling-oriented company Big Japan Pro Wrestling, credited to have popularized the deathmatch wrestling style that CZW continued to emphasize in the United States. The Academy eventually relocated to the arena in Philadelphia and briefly merged with the Chikara Wrestling Factory. That union didn't last long, however, and the Academy separated from the Chikara Wrestling Factory and moved its operation back to New Jersey. However, not long after moving back to New Jersey, head trainers DJ Hyde and John Dahmer moved the school back to Philadelphia. So they went back and forth for a few years. But let's now fast forward to 2009 when DJ purchased CZW and then began running shows all over in Germany, in Massachusetts, in Indiana. CZW's biggest show now is the year-end Cage of Death. Looking forward to talking about that and other CZW topics with our special guest, the owner of CZW, DJ Hyde. DJ, welcome to the program, and thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Now, first of all, how have you been? How was your summer, and looking forward to the holiday season?
Summer was very busy for me, wrestling-wise, and promoting CZW shows like, you know, New Heights, Tournament of Death, a lot of things going on. It's constantly running and doing different new things every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to Cage of Death. I'm really not personally looking forward to the holidays. I'm not a person who loves the holidays. It's just they're another day to me. Mm-hmm. But I am looking forward to Cage of Death, and I'm looking forward to things come next year with Combat Zone Wrestling.
I mentioned Cage of Death. It takes place on December 8th, and it's usually the culmination of all the CZW angles throughout the year. Now, you also are going to be at WrestleCon in April. So how is CZW going to incorporate that into your storyline?
As far as storylines go, Cage of Death is obviously our biggest show. It's one of the biggest shows in the independents. It's a show that brings people in from all around the world. Now, WrestleCon is a new experience for Combat Zone Wrestling, and pretty much everybody. Nobody has attempted this in the wrestling business. Now, there's been conventions and autograph signing things and, you know, joint shows, but this is an event unlike anything else. Now, storyline-wise, it is going to play into WrestleCon. There are some things that are going to it's going to build to WrestleCon. I don't think it's going to affect Cage of Death all that much. Some things, what's the word I'm looking for? You will see some things foreshadowed, I should say, at Cage of Death that you will see at WrestleCon. If you're a fan, there are things that we plan on building to at that point, things that are, you know, just going to kind of evolve. When, you know, I'm a very big proprietor of, and I used to scream about this about a lot of other promotions and companies, when you have the most people there, do something to get them to want to come back and see more.
Good point.
If you don't, then you're wasting that large audience. A lot of fans are just, you know, they're fair weather. They come like an example of this is Cage of Death. Why Night of Infamy, great show. It's getting rave reviews. It was our last show. It just happened last weekend. But, you know, we drew, you know, a fairly normal crowd where Cage of Death will be about five times that. You know, why is Cage of Death and the Tournament of Death and the Tanglewebs and the Best of the Best and so forth for other promotions, why do, you know, they draw on those particular events, you know, more fans? Because most fans only come for the big shows. It's the same thing like WrestleMania, you know, drawing what it draws and the fans coming out. It's why WrestleCon was created, because obviously it's been done similar in the past. Last year, Dragon Gate USA and CZW did some joint shows WrestleMania weekend, and it was very successful. So this year, between myself, Sal Hamari, Gabe Spolsky, and the team down at High Spots, we have put together an idea and a concept that's really something different with WrestleCon. It's bringing in everything that everybody does under one roof for an entire weekend. And if you're a wrestling fan, I think this is a place that you're going to want to be. I mean, we have the best location. We're literally 2 miles from WrestleMania. We have hotels. We have food. We have autograph signings with all, you know, the legends and the former stars. And you're getting the top independent wrestling companies in the world right now under one roof. You have CZW, Dragon Gate USA Evolve, Chikara, Shimmer. And then along with that, you're getting a little bit of a kind of sideshow antics with $5 Wrestling and Kaiser Big Battle. It's something that I don't think will affect Cage of Death, but it is something that is going to be a very, very big event.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned the fans. And along those lines, for fans that have never been to a live CZW show, what can they expect when they come to WrestleCon? What makes CZW different?
CZW is predominantly known for ultraviolence throughout the wrestling community. But it's not really what we do. We're known for it because we do it better than anybody else. And not a lot of places are doing it. I mean, most places stick to, you know, a traditional format of wrestling. But wrestling, it's a violent sport. It's all about culminating into, you know, something bigger and better. I mean, you can sit here and hear these people talk about WWE style, but if you go back to when WWE was successful in the Attitude Era, where they were doing the best business they were doing a lot more hardcore matches. I mean, Mick Foley's were going off of Hell in the Cells and no DQs, and, you know, lots of those things happened. A CZW show, though, is very much like that, but it's a little bit different. What I like to say is we're the buffet table. There is something on a CZW show for everybody. My examples of this are pretty much every aspect that I can take from wrestling, excuse me, demographic-wise and, you know, something that you're into, you know, niche-wise, we try to provide. Some people like the ultra violence. It's obviously, it's time-tested. It's a big draw for us. Mm-hmm. It's something that we do very well. But there are a lot of those people that don't. And, you know, they shun that. They are purists, or their particular style of wrestling is, you know, wrestling, you know, is wrestling, it's mat wrestling, but we have that. You know, examples of some of these things are you can have guys like Masada or Danny Havoc, who are these amazing deathmatch wrestlers and are some of the toughest men in the world, you know, that will go out there and destroy their bodies and bleed all over the place. But then you'll have a guy like Adam Cole, who is, you know, number one on WWE's watch list right now, you know, and Sami Callihan, who is, you know, very, very popular. Obviously, he's done a lot of stuff with WWE. These are not guys that traditionally do those type of matches, but they are more known for their mat technique. You know, and a guy like Sammy, he's a hard hitter. So you'll have guys that are, you know, that do the hard hitting, you know, strong style, as people like to call it. Matches like him, like myself, guys like Joker and stuff like that. And then you have guys that are great high flyers. I mean, AR Fox is probably the most prolific high flyer on the independents today. You know, you'll have guys like him and Rich Swann. Then you'll have guys, you know, that particularly don't like any of that. They come because they want to see some funny stuff. I got Greg Excellence. He's, you know, he's probably one of the funniest guys in the business. I mean, and you don't need a bunch of funny guys, but you just need enough. Right. You know, we have some other guys that are kind of like that, but Greg is obviously known as our guy. Then after that, you know, we have some of the hottest and best female athletes in this business. We have girls like Kimberly, Nevaeh, Christina Von Erie. You know, Cherry Bomb has just recently arrived, and it's giving fans a little bit of everything. Because if there's not something, you know, maybe you're a fan of certain things. If you look at the top independent promotions, and I don't mean the promotions that, like, hey, they're bringing in Matt Hardy and, you know, or John Morrison or whatever, you know, and that's the guys that are, you know, really bringing the fans in. I'm talking about independents. You know, in my mind, there are five. There's Ring of Honor, there's CZW, there's Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, there's Chikara, and there's Dragon Gate Evolve. And realistically, if you look at what those promotions do, most of them are niche promotions. Most promotions out there nowadays are, you know, they play to a certain demographic, a certain type of audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that. Obviously, we are predominantly known for hardcore, and we're going to be known for that forever. But people, if you come to a CZW show, you'll see your eyes will get opened to the guys that are realistically the foundation and the guys that are realistically main eventing shows, and you just don't know it. Yeah, our big shows are Cage of Death and stuff like that. But Sami Callihan, you know, and Adam Cole are main eventing shows. Air Fox's main eventing shows. They're in major angles and you know, they're the top guys in our company. They might not be main eventing those shows, but those certain shows, our big shows, are known for the hardcore match.
Right.
And that's a formula that most places kind of follow. It's just that they don't take it to the extremes we do. And nowadays with, you know, everything being seen, everything being done, and anybody who, you know, has a dollar can start a wrestling promotion, you know, you've really got to take it to a different level and give fans something that's just an alternative. And when you come in, yeah, maybe you don't like the main event. Maybe you're not going to like the main event of Cage of Death, which is myself versus Matt Tremont. And, you know, it's going to be violent, it's going to be bloody, and it's going to be crazy. Maybe you don't like that, but we're going to have other matches on the show, like Sami Callihan wrestling Adam Cole. That might be more your cup of tea, so you're really going to enjoy that, you know. And I think that's kind of how it is. And it's... The benefit to that is, you know, you can go to any restaurant, you know, you're going to pick something you like, but there's going to be a lot of things on that menu you don't. And, you know, maybe you like more than one thing, but there's usually something you don't, but at least you're getting that choice. Unlike a place like Ring of Honor, where it's mostly pure wrestling, you know, or it's a car where it's Lucha Libre comedy based, you're not going to see that hardcore, you know what I'm saying, Ultravox, so they're not going to get that fan base.
Right. Well, I'm glad you talked about the Cage of Death match there on December 8th. You yourself, like you said, in the main event with the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont, how much pressure do you feel at the top of the card?
Well, most people that know me know I put a lot of stress on myself. I'm a pretty negative person normally. being at the top of the card is something I actually enjoy. Like, I actually enjoy delivering. I live for moments in wrestling. There's about two things in wrestling that make me, or in life that make me happy. My fiance and realistically having those moments. Not just having, oh, it was a good match. I mean, there's a moment. There's that reaction from the crowd, that emotional feeling that everybody feels at the same time. You know, and people have recognized them throughout history of the business. I mean, Hogan, Slam, and Andre, those moments that you always remember back and you think, wow, that was a CZW moment.
Right.
With Matt and me, I mean, it's something that I think people are emotionally invested in. I feel a lot of pressure because we've done two matches now, and over since our feud has been going on over a year and a half, but we've done two matches and they've been very well praised. So now we're taking it up a notch and I'm nervous, obviously, and I feel a lot of pressure on delivering, but there's also that pressure that I've been in that Cage of Death. Matt has not, and I've main evented the Cage of Death show before, and I know what it's like being in there and what that crowd can do, and not only just the pressure of being at the top of the card, but, you know, these type of matches, they're very dangerous. There's always that element of you can't control certain things, and you have to worry about that. You know, and along with that, being the owner of the company, you also have to worry about, well, you know, we have to build this thing, we have to pay the bills, yada, 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 yada. And those are all things that are going to be on my head at the end of that day. One way or another, you know, it's going to come down to what we have done and what I have built, and if it culminates the way that I hope it does and the match goes that way, we'll be successful. And that's the goal. But, you know, it could also go really awry. And that pressure sits there. I mean, it's what keeps me up at night. And, you know, it's the reason I don't go to bed till 3 or 4 in the morning sometimes, where you're sitting there thinking, oh, what are we, you know, how are we going to deliver? Or how am I going to build this cage? Or, you know, what the heck am I going to do that day? And I got to make sure this is done and that's done. And, you know, you have all those stresses on you, and then on top of that, you need to go in there, you know, and put on this phenomenal match that needs to be phenomenal and people need to talk about, because if they don't, it's going to realistically ruin a lot of the things you're going to do in the new year. And, you know, plus when you've had a year and a half long program, you have to deliver. So
right.
I think it's probably one of the most stressful things I've done in a long time. So, yeah, there's a lot of pressure.
DJ, this is the first Cage of Death show that you will actually be presenting outside of the ECW arena. ECW arena was the longtime home of CZW from Cage of Death 3.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel any different presenting the show in a different arena?
Yeah. The ECW arena, to me, it's like home. Literally, for probably about the last 11 going on 12 years of my life as a wrestler, I would say, I have spent probably 3 to 4 days a week in that building, every week. Our wrestling school was there, you know, a lot of shows were there. I wrestled a lot of shows. I've been very fortunate to main event that building many, many times. I've been very fortunate to be in that building and just spend time there, of where, you know, some people that have come through this business have made their names and really, really, you know, done something special and inspired me to get into this business. I mean, I was a fan. I could, you know, if you go back and watch old ECW tapes, you'll probably see me sitting in the audience. Now we're over in Flyer Skate Zone and things are different. We don't have the conveniences we used to have at the arena. We don't have that arena feel. It's something different that not, it's really hard to put words on, where it's when you're in Flyers Gates, and while I feel Flyers is a better building, like I like the building better. I think it's cleaner, it's nicer, it's in a better area. There's good parking and yada yada yada. You don't have that. It's the arena feel, you know, that, you know, guys like, you know, Taz and RVDs and, you know, Benoit's and, I mean, the list goes on. I mean, I could sit here and list guys all day that have been in that building that had Stone Cold, Steve Austin, you know, who've had those moments of just being in that building and what that building means to fans. I think also not being in that building is going to pose a major challenge. I think one of my biggest worries is Voorhees to Philadelphia. Literally, the ECW arena to Flyers Skate Zone is probably about a 15-minute drive. Not even. I mean, that's with traffic and crossing, you know, a major, major bridge in Philadelphia and New Jersey. And I can't get some of the old fans, you know, that came to the arena shows just to come, you know, 15-minute drive. So I think it's going to be a major challenge to get people to come to Cage of Death. It's a new building. It's a facility they're not familiar with. Currently, the building does not have alcohol, which is a big, big draw to professional wrestling. And, you know, we also don't have that where when we're in the arena, we can start building this cage in the arena, you know, 2-3 weeks out to where now we don't get into the building until 2 o'clock.
Oh.
So, I mean, you don't have those conveniences of, okay, we can measure this precisely, or we can mount this in the ceiling, or, you know, you don't have those things. And that's a major, major worry of mine. And it's just not the same. But in the long run, it might actually be better, because this show could actually make this building. We have a new fan base over there. We have great fans that are attending shows. You know, a lot of new people that have never watched the product before, where the old fans really, I mean, there's still some of them that, you know, they come, they're the diehards. They're going to come no matter what because they love it. But there's a lot of fans that were in Philadelphia, which is not very far, that just, you know, they don't want to cross that bridge for whatever reason. And now I think this might be the show where we really go in, do something special, and tear the house down. So.
What is the proudest moment you've had since you've been running CZW?
Since I've been running CZW? That's a tough one. I'm going to have to say a couple of things. A couple of angles have really... I'm not perfect. I mean, as a booker and a promoter, especially early on when I took over, I had a lot of problems adjusting. From going from being a wrestler who... you know, has lived and died with these guys, you know, slept in airports and in cars and God knows where, drove in, you know, 20-some hours at a time, to being the guy who's going, you're doing this, and that's that. I think where I am now, I'm pretty proud of that as a booker. But as owning the promotion, I think, you know, not just watching angles come to fruition that where I have a concept and they really, really work and they really, really get over. I think some of the prouder things I've done as the owner is I'm starting to see the change. CZW is we're at that point where we've been the redheaded stepchild forever because we do the ultraviolet and the hardcore, and you know, people don't want to come see us for whatever reason, or you know, we don't get to play in the magazines or on the radio shows, or you know, or, you know, an example, like a perfect example of this was our last show. I had Davey Richards wrestle Masada, and, you know, Masada can flat out wrestle. He can go, but he's predominantly known as, you know, he's won Tournament of Death back to back years. He made a living at BJW in Japan. And, you know, he's known for the death matches. And when I brought Davey in and I said, hey, I'd like you to come in and work Masada, he's like, well, I haven't watched a lot of CZW lately, but I know Masada's kind of a hardcore guy, and that's not really something I want to do. And I'm like, well, just realistically, like, I said, dude, I just want this nice, good, hard-hitting battle. I was like, trust me, you're going to like it. And then afterwards, he came to me and goes, dude, I will come work here for you anytime. And things like that are, I think, are the most things I'm most proud of. Watching my guys like Sammy Callahan and Adam Cole, a kid that – literally, I trained from the ground up. You know, there are tons of guys. John Moxley, they've ascended to where they were a certain type of wrestler, and now they're some of the top guys in the business. You know, not just on the independent level, but all around. I mean, internationally, you know, guys like Sammy and Adam. I mean, John Moxley, who is now Dean Ambrose at WWE, FCW, whatever you want to call it. I mean, these were guys when I met John. He was going to quit wrestling. And, you know, I gave him a home and you know, he's a friend of mine and it's just one of those things. And, you know, guys like Chris Hero, Claudio Castagnoli, well, I mean, these are all guys at WWE now that you're seeing them get major success. And, you know, not just on the that level, but they're doing what they want to do, and they're doing it better than most. And to me, my legacy in this business, I mean, I've had my WWE opportunity, and at some point we could discuss that and how I screwed that up pretty bad. But realistically, my legacy in this business is going to be the guys that I have developed and trained. Those are the guys, you say that when you have a child, you pass on your family name. You know, guys like Adam Cole, that's my child. He's my baby. He's the guy that he's as good as he is. And that well, because I have taught him that, because I have raised him to be a professional wrestler in this business. I mean, Sammy Callahan, who, you know, he would never admit it, but, you know, when I met him, he was, you know, little Cannonball Callahan, gave him a job, put him in a great angle, gave him the positions, worked out with him, you know, got him down to our school, you know, I got him over as a babyface, you know, in CZW, where he feuded with me for about a year. And, those are all little things that, like, to me, when I sit back, I go, wow, I'm really, really happy about that, you know. I think in the future, I think it's probably going to be, you know, just my legacy with them, but also what I've accomplished with CZW. Like, right now, out of all the independents, we have a lot of international business. We have connections in England. We have connections in Germany, Japan, Canada, Mexico. We actually do tours there. We actually, realistically, a couple weeks ago, just got back from Europe. And from doing shows over there, and that's something that, you know, the bridges that were burnt and the things that were tore down before I took over, and I fought tooth and nail and sacrificed, you know, not just my body but my time, my money, you know, everything to get these where they need to be.
You mentioned that. Can you explain what happened between you and World Wrestling Entertainment?
Well, I'm not real sure how many fans out there that listen to your show know how it kind of works, or the history of DJI. Basically, what they used to do, besides these tryouts and things that you see where guys are paying tons of money to come down, what they typically would do is they would book guys for TVs. They'd bring you in for Raw or SmackDown or house shows, and they would take a look at you. And I had a lot of good connections. Off of the Wild Samoan, I can credit a lot to Al Snow. Pretty much gave me my knowledge in this business. He's my mentor. He's the guy who I literally will call the guy who opened my eyes and trained me. Not showed me how to do wrestling moves, but he was the one who taught me the business. Les Thatcher's, you know, great friends of mine, people that have really assisted me. And I did a lot of what we call TVs. Like, you go and you're there and you're like an extra. You know, and before that, you have to be there at, like, 1 o'clock, and, like, somebody at the time, the last time I was there, like, it was Jamie Noble. You'd be there, you'd do matches, you'd do promos. I think now it's Regal and Bill DeMont mm-hmm. are doing them now. You know, it got to the point where John Laurinaitis would sit in, and I would talk to him all the time, and he would always ask me the same question. It's a question I ask talent now, because I know the answer. And when I was probably about 2 or 3 years and I first started doing these, I didn't understand what he meant. He's like, tell me how you can make me money. You know, and I couldn't figure it out. And then they brought me down to Florida about 5 years ago for a tryout. And it was at office school, actually. And Laurinaitis pulled me aside, and he said to me, he goes, DJ, he goes, you're probably one of the best, you know, big guys I've seen down here. He goes, you got good size. He goes, your promo skills are amazing. He goes, and which is one of my strengths, and I know that. He goes, but you look like shit. And I said, well, if you give me a job and I don't have to, you know, kill myself working a regular job, because I don't work a regular job now, but at the time I was, mm-hmm. and, you know, to put food on the plate and blah, 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 if I can make my living off of wrestling, you know, and, you know, you give me a contract, you know, at FCW right now, I mean, from 9 to 12, they lift every day. You know, they have professional weight training equipment there. They have guys there that'll, you know, you need to take this supplement and blah, blah. I mean, and everybody's into it down there. So, okay, you give me that time. Dude, I'll be in shape in 6 months, no problem. And I'm already at the time, I'm not in the shape I was then. But at the time, you know, I wasn't in terrible shape. I just wasn't, you know, what their ideal situation was. So he said, I'm going to, Then he asked me, he said, tell me how you can make me money. And I told him, I said, this is how you make your money. He goes, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. And he booked me for a bunch of TVs up in the Northeast. And what it is they do these loops. Like, you know, they're in Scranton one night, they're in Reading the next, then they're in Philly, and then they're in, you know, New Jersey, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he booked me for a bunch of shows. And there's a gentleman there who, and I've probably done 30, maybe more. I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. I think 30 is probably a low number. I've probably done, you know, TVs and stuff like that tons of times. And there's a gentleman there who works there named Mark Carano. And pretty much all I ever saw Mark was kind of like a lackey for Larry Nice, like you would get him his coffee type of guy. So I didn't really know, you know. And when you're there, the pressure you put on yourself is immense. I mean, and they don't just bring in one guy. I mean, there's always a group of guys. There's like when you guys watch those security guards on WWE TV that are holding people back. They're indie guys, you know. They're indie wrestlers. That's all they really are. They're guys that came there and that were from the area that, you know, they think, oh well, this guy might be something to look at, or this guy has a good connection, or somebody kind of got him a hookup to get in there, or you know. Because, I mean, that's how it works. It's also, you know, it's a decent, well, it's, you know, the money's good. So, you know, it's nice to have that. And it got to that point where Afa pulled me aside before I did this and said, son, as he's, Pops, I'm sorry, like, it's son, you, he's like, WWE is very, very interested and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, he started talking to me about going to Pittsburgh, which is where they do all their drug tests and evals and all that stuff. And, and I'm like, I'm at this point in my head, I'm going, man, I gotta go in here and I gotta deliver and I gotta go crazy. And, you know, and you're thinking, you know, you have all the stress on you. And I went out there and I did this match. And, I remember I walked into the back and Ricky Reyes was there. And, Ricky's done, oh God, he's probably done more TV than I have. I mean, he's always there. You know, guys like him, Nick Burke used to be there all the time too.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Carano came up to me, and he started critiquing me. And, like, I'm just sitting here thinking, this is a guy who's getting learned. Like, you're an intern or something. And he's really not. He's a very important person. And he started telling me what to do, and he kind of got me. Like, I thought I did okay. Like, I thought, all right, well, I did this, so I'm going to go back out there, and I'm going to kill it. You know what I'm saying? I kind of was put with a guy who – you know, he doesn't have a lot of experience, but he's very, you know, he's big and he's got an amazing look. And, you know, I'm trying to work with the kid, but it's not easy for me. You know, at the time, now I can go in and wrestle a broomstick and have a great match because I know how to work it. But I'm just like, at this point, I didn't care about him. I cared about me, and I cared about like, all right, I got to kill this, you know, and which was probably the wrong thing to do. But that was how your mindset is. You're sitting there thinking, I'm here to get a job. And Carano was critiquing me, and I don't know. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he said something to me that kind of, like, offended me. It just, like set me, and I said to him, I said, have you ever worked a day in your life? He goes, what do you mean? I said, are you a wrestler? Have you ever trained or anything? And he goes, no. He goes, you know, I work in the office and blah, 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 blah. And I said to him, why the hell? So why are you telling me how to do my job? Like, don't tell me how to be a wrestler. You know, and I got smart with him. I mean, I literally, that was the wrong thing to do. You know, since then, I have not been brought back very often. it's been a long time, to be honest. Now, I've gotten guys brought in. Like, I've had some of my guys up there, you know, Adam Coles and stuff like that. I kind of have that pool now to where I've developed that as a promoter. But at the time, right then, it was, a week after that, Afa called me and was like, son, what did you do? And I told him, and they don't like, a lot of guys don't like Carano, but he did at the time. He doesn't now, but at the time, he had a lot of pull. Yeah, he was getting coffee for Laranitis. Well, Laranitis is the man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have a guy like Maven Bentley who is, you know, the vice president of CZW. Maven will run around and get stuff for me if I want him to, but he's probably the next most important guy in the company next to me. And, you know, it was one of those things where at the time I was so stressed out and you're sitting there and you're just going to yourself, man, who is this idiot telling me what to do? You know, and that's a big thing about wrestling. Like, people listen to fans and they listen. Look, man, I'm not going to tell a doctor how to make me better. He's a doctor.
Right.
I'm not going to tell an auto mechanic, well, what are you doing? Fix the car this way. Because if I was going to do that, you know, why didn't I do it myself? They're an auto mechanic for a reason. I don't, you know, that's why my car breaks down. I take it to the guy that fixes it because he's a professional. He knows what he's doing. That's his job. If it ain't your, I'm not going to tell him how to do his job. I'm not going to tell a surgeon how to operate. You know, he went and got educated. So why should somebody tell me how to wrestle? And I'm big on that. I'm very, very big on that. But the problem was I was unprofessional about it. And I've made a lot of mistakes in this business, and I've learned from them. And realistically, it was one of those things where I didn't think I was, like, you know, the prototypical, oh, this guy's got to get signed, like, you know, some of these indie guys. But I had good size, I had good connections, I had a good look, and I'm smart. And I know how to work and what the business is all about. And most guys don't get that anymore. And realistically, I think that's what they liked about me. And Laurinaitis liked me, and, you know, I had a lot of people backing me and things like that. Like, I know Triple H at one point really liked me. I got to meet him a couple of times, and, you know, it was one of those things, like, all the right people, but once one of them, once you get that one bad taste, it's like, you're done. You know, I mean, you were completely, I mean, guys at FCW, you know, you cut your hair, you get a tattoo, you do one thing wrong, you're fired. You know, and that's how quick it is. There's a million guys. Okay, yeah, you want to be like this? Well, you know, there's a million guys like you that are vying for that spot, that opportunity to just, you know, just be there and have the opportunity to be at an OVW or an FCW or, you know, Deep South at the time. And now it's like when I look back on that, it was like, man, I wish I was just, you know, the first rule of wrestling is keep your ears and eyes open and your mouth shut. Believe nothing of what you hear and half of what you see. And I did not do that because I just put so much pressure on myself and decided that I was I knew better than somebody who was in charge. You know?
DJ, as you said, it was a real learning opportunity for you. But now that you run your own promotion, have you been able to apply it to that side of it as well, the business side?
Very much so. I know talent. And I've applied that. Like, Michael Pancoast is, you know, the owner of Hybrid ENT, along with part of myself. I own a little bit of it, but he is predominantly the person who handles that and runs our production. I'll put our production values up against anybody's in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes TNA's and WWE. I mean, I will say our production values are second to none because of that man. And, his craziness, and that he is a professional guy. You know, he knows what he's doing. I do not. I have all these ideas on concepts and things I want to do. I go to him. I don't run them by, you know, someone else. I go to him because that's what he does. I have another guy that we call Scrawny Shawning. He's the guy who pretty much builds all the crazy contraptions, and he's the head of my security. I mean, he's 5'6". I mean, he's for head of security, but the man's like MacGyver. I could give him, you know, a paper clip, a rubber band, and a piece of paper, and he's going to build you a house. You know what I mean? And it's going to last. And, you know, in his real job, he's a professional contractor. So I don't know how to do any of those things, and I'm not going to tempt them. So when it comes to building the Cage of Death, like we're actually getting ready to do here during Thanksgiving weekend, I go to him. And he's a professional, and that's what I do. I mean, when I cultivate talent. I can see talent. They saw talent in me. Carano liked me. He's, you know, we're still in, like, friendly terms. Like, I've spoken to him many times after that, mm-hmm. and, like, I've even apologized, and we've had a, you know, a ha-ha-ha over it. But when you look at it, it was, you know, you don't want to piss those guys off. I mean, Michael Pancoast threatens to quit every show. And it's usually because, like, I mean, he threw it to Michael Pancoast, and trust me, I have the toughest roster in professional wrestling. I'm going to tell you right now, our guys, they're tough dudes. Michael Pancoast comes walking through the locker room to see parts, buddy. And this is a man who's never been in a fight in his life, all right? Who, you know, when we went to Germany this year on Sunday, he had to find a church. Like Sunday, he had to find like the, I don't know what type of church it was, but it was like a specific church to make mass. And, you know, like he had to be there. I mean, he's a straight as an arrow type of guy, but I'm telling you, man, he had a guy who, we did a show, where was it? We did a show in Ohio, and, the guys were like, it was a hardcore match, and the guys were like brawling into a hallway, and we had a new camera guy. And he wasn't aware of how to work the cording, so he went to get this shot. He got the shot, but he didn't get it as well as Pankhurst wanted him to. So Michael threw a steel chair through a wall. And when I mean through a wall, I mean it went into the wall and it's sticking out of the wall. So, you know, yeah, it's one of those things that you're looking at it going, how did that happen? And, you know, there are guys like that they're just talented that, you know, I don't question their authorities anymore. I don't, you know, or like they'll give me a suggestion. Like Michael sees things that I don't see because he's filming things, you know, like, hey, can we do this to get the guys to get this so I can get this shot that'll make it better, that I'll, you know, it's one of those things where now I will take that advice. And even though, you know what I'm saying, like some, you overlook things. I do that a lot with booking. You know, people overlook minuscule things. You might have the greatest idea in the world, but there's that little teeny thing that could take it from like an 8 to a 10,
yeah.
You know, that you might not see because you're so stuck on, you know, your vision and all those other things. You know, it's there. Now I'll take those criticisms. And I learned that from that experience. And, you know, I think also, you know, a lot of that, you know, I learned the wrestling business from a lot of those experiences. And in the long run, I have made probably every mistake you can possibly make. But it's made me a better wrestler. It's also made me a better trainer and a better promoter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why I am who I am today.
Wow, it sounds extremely difficult to run a wrestling company and to be an actor.
You have no clue.
Roster. Do you have a timetable about how long you would like to fill both roles, and do you get more enjoyment out of one or the other?
I get more enjoyment, obviously, out of being a wrestler. When I first took over CZW, I brought Mike Burns with Smart Mark Video back in to book and to help me run the promotion. Burns, during my time frame within Combat Zone, he was a booker at one time. He did do a lot of stuff. And obviously, he sells CZW DVDs, so it affects his business, too. And if CZW does well, he does well. I realized not long after that, because I love being a wrestler. Trust me, I'm not as good a wrestler as I need to be. Like, my body and all that stuff, I know I need to do a lot of things. And I openly admit stuff like that, but, like, you know, I'm good at what I do and I enjoy it. And, but the promotion side of being the promoter and the booker and all the hats that I wear, you know, when I first took over was difficult, but in the long run, it's my vision. It's what I want. You know, the great thing, like about WWE, there's writers and, you know, all these guys that do stuff. But at the end of the day, Vince McMahon comes in and says, do this, and it gets done. You know, I mean, and he's had a lot of bad, stupid ideas, you know. I mean, he gets a hard-on for whatever, but it's his idea. It's his company. And the bottom line is, with somebody else running the ship, it's never going to be truly yours, and you're always going to have that problem of, you know, when they screw up or something doesn't go right, it's your money. You know, at the end of the day, it's your livelihood. It's your dream, your vision, you know. It's what you wanted, not what they wanted. You know, if they put something out there that you don't want, or does something that you don't think is correct, because my vision on what professional wrestling is and Mike Burns is way different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've been in the locker room where he'll tell you no psychology needed in matches. Like, he'll tell guys that, and I'll be like, look, you guys do this, I'm going to kill you. You know, it's... because that's crazy spots and flips and stuff sold to DVDs, so that benefits him. Well, I don't really care about that.
Right.
You know, I care about, you know, the ends. Well, while we're selling DVDs, if the house is down and the product's bad and we're not being looked at as a place that is a good place to do business with and that fans generally enjoy, then I got a major problem with that. And that's kind of, and it's not a knock on Burns, because he's right. I mean, it does. It sells DVDs. And that was, you know, the main focus. And our fan base loves that kind of stuff. But that's not my vision. My vision was always to get the buffet table. And it's been a battle to get to that. You know, my ECW was very much, like, I love the ECW format of, you know, they always had hot girls like Beulah and Francine and stuff like that. You know, they had great brawly guys, you know, guys like New Jack and the Dudleys, you know, they had great characters. Dudley's perfect characters, tough guys like Taz and Michael. You know, they had all this high flying guys, you know, Mysterio and stuff like that. They had this like collection of different stuff that I always loved. And, you know, maybe that's probably where it was, because I grew up watching ECW in that arena. And, you know, and there wasn't 50 million indies out there. There was, you know, there was ECW, ECWA, and I think that was all there was on the Northeast besides maybe TWA in New Jersey. You know, and where I grew up, I used to be able to walk to ECWA, and now I'm an ECWA Hall of Famer. So, you know, those are little things that stick out, but it's going from being the wrestler and the promoter, I mean, I take being a wrestler over a promoter any day, but at the end of the day, in CZW, I need to be both, because it's my vision, and it's always going to be that way. There may be times, like, I mean, I'll tell you right now, there's times where, like, hey, guys come up with ideas, and I take their ideas and run with it, you know, or, I might bet, hey, I'll come up with a concept, but I don't know how to, like, unfold it. So, you know, I'll call Les Thatcher. I'll call Gabe. You know, me and Gabe, I usually have dinner every couple of weeks and just, you know, randomly talk about, you know, hey, what are you doing? What am I doing? Oh, what do you think of this? I mean, I've given Gabe tons of ideas that he's actually used, and Gabe's given me a couple of ideas that I've actually used. You know, Les Thatcher, or I'll call Al Snow and go, hey, I'm trying to figure this out, but I really can't. And their experience and doing this longer and better, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have those guys around and do that. But it's challenging. And then also, you know, you're always stressed about money. And, like, I don't have a job. I don't, you know, I used to work at banks and stuff like that. And I don't do that anymore. I haven't done that in a long time. So at the end of the day, my mortgage on my house, you know, has to get paid by wrestling and me actually being a performer and a promoter. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's stressful. Or, you know, you have all these grown men and women who, I say this religiously, that, you know, I basically babysit 50 to 60 grown men and children that are grown men and women that act like children, because that's what they do. I mean, I'll, you know, Sammy Callahan's like the kid who just, like, he's like, Dad, I'm in trouble. Can you help me out all the time? You know, I mean, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, Sam, you know, and there's a lot of guys like that. It's, yeah, I'm on the road with him this weekend. So it's, I'm sure he's going to hear me complain, because he constantly borrows money from me that I don't have. I'll go, Sammy, did you take that t-shirt from the merch table? Well, yeah, it's not a big deal. Yes, it is, because I paid to get it made, you know, and I have an inventory and things. That's like, you know, there are things like that, you know, that you worry about. We have a wrestling school that, you know, you got to babysit people and make sure they're there. And, you know, it's very complicated, because one person can screw up everything for you. And it just kills me.
You know, DJ, you mentioned the buffet table, and you mentioned the other five independent companies in the country, the big ones. And a lot of them are known for the style of wrestling they provide. And maybe the most underrated part of your company is the technical wrestling, the Adam Coles, the R. Fox, the Jonathan Greshams, because you do present the hardcore style of wrestling. And that maybe is a little predominant theme in your company. That, on top of the fact that, I mean, you as promoter, booker, owner, I imagine there's a lot of liabilities with guys going out there and going through glass, going through thumbtacks. Has there ever been an incident, or have you ever had a moment that you're like, you know what, that was the last Ultravala match I'm ever doing, it's not worth it?
Every single time, to be honest. But there's probably been, really, for myself, I think the biggest thing this year was, or for me in a long time, was this year's Tournament of Death. This year's Tournament of Death was set up where, I remember, I was not in the tournament, and I swear to God, the story behind this, and this is just me being real, this isn't DJ Hyde the character or any of that stuff. My fiance and me, I kept telling her, I'm not going to get hurt, I'm not doing anything, I'm just out there running my mouth and doing promos and stuff. And the way it was booked was to continue my angle with Matt Tremont and actually kind of finish it and go in to a program with Masada, who is the world champion. So Masada has been built up as the guy who's unbeatable, but he's very loved. You know, he's a big, tough, crazy-looking guy. He, you know, he can do all styles of wrestling. I mean, he's been everywhere. I mean, he was in, you know, Ring of Honor for a long time back in the Tay Day. He lived in Japan, and, you know, he's a very, very versatile wrestler. And the program that was originally the idea was supposed to be me and him towards the end of this year. What it was on the show, I cost Matt Tremont his match by a distraction, and yada, 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 and, you know, which was building to our Tangle Web show, which would have been the big blow-off between me and Matt, which was actually the first match we had. But it would have been to get where we needed to go. And then Matt's still very young in this business. he's still in that rookie. He's only been wrestling maybe 3 years at this point. And he's a work in progress, I will say that. He's gotten worlds better. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal wrestler now. You know, because he's been down training at CZW Dojo. He's lost a ton of weight. He's finally got international experience. But the thing was the main event was the finals of Tournament of Death this year was Drake Younger and Masada. And Masada got hurt earlier on. It wasn't bad, but we played it into an angle. He got hurt and cut his arm. So I'm sitting here waiting for them to go home, and then they changed the go-home spot because something happened. I don't know what it was, but they did turn it into a submission. And the crowd kind of came down, and the angle was I go out there, and it's Masada has beaten everybody, but he's never beaten me. And it was one of those things where I say that, and then I lay him out, and then here comes Matt to chase me off, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I told him, I was like, come out there with, like, you know, something crazy, you know, something that's going to scare me. Because if you're just going to come out, you know, by yourself, I'm 6'4". I'm a big guy. I'm one of the baddest guys there are. If you're going to come out and try and go fist to fist with me, I'm down to go with you. But if you come out with, you know, some kind of crazy weapon, I'll run it. So, I looked out there and right as I, maybe 5 seconds before I was about to go out, I said, Matt, when you come out, just hit me. You know what I'm saying? To give the crowd the go home happy moment. Cause it's a big show and I'm trying to get them, like, I'll get the angle in that I want because we have a huge, huge fan base and portray that, but let's send them home happy. Let's not piss them off. You know, especially, you know, people that have been sitting there, deathmatch fans, you know, they like to drink and party and see craziness. So I'm sitting there like, all right, hit me. So I take about 5 steps out through the curtain. Matt comes out and hits me. I'm like, I go to one knee and I go, what did you just do? You know what I'm saying? And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, I'm going to kill him. He's dead. I'm going to get up and I'm probably going to choke him to death. And he's standing over me and I get up and we get nose to nose and security's like grabbing him. And I go, what did you do? He goes, for some reason, all I heard was hit me and I just came out and hit you. And I'm like, oh my God. So I go out after that. I do the thing with Masada. You know, I present, it's one of those things like it's a trophy presentation and yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, I tell him how great of a wrestler is and how he's beating everybody. And then I go butt me and I hit him with my finish, which is a lariat. And then I lay him out. And then at that time, I was expecting Matt to come, but Matt didn't come. So I look over to the referee and I go, he goes, they're coming. I said, who? He said, everyone. And I turn around, and the next thing I know, I'm getting bipped and popped, and, like, there's, like, 8 guys just hitting me and hitting me with crap, and I'm like, I have nowhere to go. And then I go down, and Abdullah Kobayashi is in town, and he's very, very over, huge, huge, big Japan deathmatch champion, is a very, very big star in Japan, and he was over for that show. And so I call something for him to do in the ring. You know, and I'm sitting there, and then at the time, Lucky 13 decides he's going to jump off the top of the corner post. Not the ropes, because the ropes were taken down because we had, like, no barbed wire up, but the corner post. And he's in flip-flops, might I mind you. And they set up a light tube, and obviously this is Torn Red Essence. This is the show that is the most ultraviolet show in the damn world. He sets up a light tube, and I'm wearing a shirt, and I'm thinking it's on my chest, and that's not a problem. Like, I'm fine, you know. Like, nothing will happen. I had on like three shirts, you know. I don't care. So, as he goes off, and I watch the tape of this, somebody's pant leg or shoe caught the light tube, and the light tube turned on my chest. And when he hit, he came down, and it rolled, and the tube went into my arm, to my right arm, and it cut the main artery in my arm to the point where it was one of those things that when it first happened, like, you know, you don't know it, but if you go back and you look at the pictures and you look at my right elbow, within seconds, you can't see it because it's covered in blood. And I mean, it's gushing. And shortly after that, I roll out of the ring and I look at Scrawny Shawnee and I go 911 now. And by the time I walked through the curtain, I couldn't feel my arm. I couldn't, like, I could move and everything. I couldn't feel anything. And I'm in the back, and this is the first time ever my fiance, who has been with me for over 4 years at this point, and with me through wrestling, came into a locker room. You know, and she works for CCW. She's the pro shop manager. She sells merchandise and stuff. And she is in my face freaking out why doctors are trying to stop the bleeding in my arm, and I have no clue what the hell's going on. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what did I just do?
Mm-hmm.
And I have done matches. I mean, I have done the craziest stuff. I mean, fire. I mean, I've done tons of light tubes. I've done, you know, barbed wire, you tenzans, you cactus. I've done stuff that the guys, I've done matches. I did the first Saul death match with syringes, you know, in the United States. I mean, it was something, you know, we did a match, me and Tremont, our second match was, Squared Circle of Fear. And it hasn't been attempted in 10 years anywhere.
Wow.
You know, it's actually a pretty easy match to do. I mean, it's the match that retired, you know, the CZW deathmatch legend and the wife beater because, you know, he got so hurt in it. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking to myself while this is going on, like, oh, my God. You know, and I didn't have a job. You know, I don't have a regular job. And I don't have benefits or any of that stuff. I'm going, how am I going to pay for this hospital bill? Am I going to be able to wrestle again? How am I going to make money? You know. And you're sitting there thinking of all these things, and you're thinking, is this really worth it? You know, and then you have that's probably the biggest moment in my career that, you know, I've been hurt, nothing bad. Like, I've been, you know, I've messed up, you know, it's wrestling. You're going to get hurt. There's no getting around it. You've had your bell rung, you know, your leg hurts, your arm hurts, your shoulder or whatever. You know, you kind of just deal with some of that. This was like major injury, and, literally, they stitched me up and I was fine. I have a problem with my bicep now my bicep is a little high that the doctors told me that I have bleeding in my bicep and it's going to last for like 8 months. So, like, it looks like I have a bicep tear, but I don't. It's actually good because it makes my arms look bigger. But, you know, it's one of those things where you sit there and you think, is that worth it? And deathmatch wrestling is an art form. There are ways to do stuff safely. And what happened there was they were trying to improvise something to make an angle work, and it didn't work. And, you know, I've watched Nick Gage get hurt. I've seen guys, you know, I've seen guys do fire spots where they're on fire. You know, I've been in those matches. You sit there and think, is it worth it? And then, you know, I did that, and then a couple months later, I'm out there doing that Squared Circle of Fear match with, you know, fire and for, you know, I mean, I'm sitting there going, why am I doing this? You know, you just do it, and, you know, and that's how it is. It's, you know, I'm doing the Cage of Death match where I know the Cage of Death, it has 14 panes of glass in it, all right? I know that because I came up with the concept for it. And I had to pay for the glass, which was ridiculously priced. So when you're sitting there thinking to yourself, you're going, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to. Like, I don't want to be out there and get hurt. Like, I have a big scar on my face from a pane of glass from an accident, you know, from a couple of years ago. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, what possessed me to put myself in this angle and to come up with this, you know what I'm saying? And then there are times of days where you're sitting there thinking that, and then there are times of days where you're sitting there thinking, man, this is going to be great. You know what I'm saying? Like, the crowd's going to love it. You know, I know it does. And that's, it just totally takes you to another place, and you just go, well, it is what it is, and go from there. So, like, for me, I don't think I'm ever going to stop wrestling. I'm either going to stop wrestling because I can't or because of attrition. So.
Right. Well, DJ, tell us a little bit about the importance of internet pay-per-view to CZW. I know that IPTVs are really important in a lot of indie wrestling promotions.
Well, with the iPay-per-view, we go through hybrident.tv. As I said, it is an in-house production. It's owned by Michael Pankos, and I have a lot to do with that. They predominantly only carry CZW products now.
Okay.
They used to carry some other promotions, but now it's the CZW thing. I believe that the future is that DVDs, it's like this just in society. At one point, it was VHS tapes. Another point, it was DVDs. Everybody thought it would be Blu-rays and stuff like that. The internet and the web now, you can actually watch a CZW show on your phone, you know? So, I mean, you can get in, log into HybridENT, sign up. You know, there's tons of shows on there. And the benefits to it, you know, that's the way of the future. The benefits to the company is there's very low production. We don't have to make a DVD, and there's no shipping, and, you know, you don't have to wait for that. But it is the way of the future. It's also very important because a lot of companies don't make money. CZW is one of them. Most companies don't make money up front. DVD sales and merchandise and stuff like that are what make money, and that's all back end. It's not something that you can have instantaneously. With that, it's, you know, it's a PayPal transaction. The money's in your bank the next day.
Yep.
And, you know, I know that Dragon Gate USA lives and dies by that iPay-per-view. And, you know, I think in the next 5 years, because obviously now it's big now. It's the new market. But in 5 years, you'll be able to watch a CZW show live on your television. I mean, even now you can watch it through your Xbox on your TV. I mean, I have a big, you know, 60-inch TV in my bedroom that has my Xbox hooked up to it. If I want, I'll just sign in, click, click, click. Here we go. Oh, there's CZW on my TV. You know, I can watch it live, you know. So maybe since, you know, you don't live in New Jersey or the Philadelphia area and you can't afford to travel, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours or whatever it is, you know, or some guys that are overseas. I mean, we have a very, very large overseas market. You know, we get more high pay-per-view buys in Europe than we do in the United States. It's just, that's where people are watching, you know, the product, and they watch it live. I mean, Cage of Death will probably, I mean, we're going to do very well for Cage of Death, but we're probably going to have a huge international market for it. And they don't want to wait for a DVD because, you know, we typically have a turnaround time no longer than 2 weeks on a just a DVD release show. Well, people that are in, say, Germany, you know, they're going to have to wait for that. Then they're going to have to wait for the shipping. They're going to have to wait for it to clear customs, then get it, you know. And it's not something where by then, you know, like I don't watch Monday Night Raw all the time because I can just go on somebody's website and, oh, there's the results. I know what happened. You know, it's, I don't need to watch it. You know, the experiences are watching things live. And, I think that's
right.
That's the future for pretty much all independent companies. But, for CZW, I want to get to that point because I think we offer an iPay-per-view experience that's different than everybody else's. Ours, it looks professional. It looks the way that you would want it to be and how you want things to be.
In 2008, you and your company was featured in the movie The Wrestler, where a professional wrestler headlines Madison Square Garden, and then on the way down, he finds himself in the ECW arena wrestling the Necro Butcher in a hardcore match and later pukes. And I don't remember if there was a payment issue, but do you feel like that kind of sheds your company a bad light, or were you happy for the exposure?
Well, if you watch that movie for myself personally, I'm all over that movie. I had a lot to do with that and a lot to do with how CZW got connected to it, which actually all stemmed through Off of the Wild Samoan. The movie, the way it was filmed, and things that were filmed, they changed a lot of that when it came out, which is kind of funny. But Mickey Rourke's character had a best friend. There was a lot more interactions with his daughter and things. They filmed a lot of stuff that never made the final cut. It does, in a way, because it is the hardcore, and, it made certain things look a certain way. Like when you see them in the Ring of Honor, aspect, that's the big show. They're in the Hammerstein Ballroom, and at the time Ring of Honor had amazing production values and things like that. It's predominantly known, to be one of the top places, and it makes them look like two fans, like, oh, ROH, well, that's big, because the wrestler movie gave it that feel, where CZW, all they know is, oh, here's the Necro Butcher and this hardcore core guy, I can remember Cage at F9, Mickey, Darren, and apologize, I'm calling him by the first name, but pretty much the entire cast of the wrestler came to the ECW arena to watch Cage at F9.
Huh.
Happened, the main event was the NBA, which was the Maven Bentley Association, which I happened to be in at the time, against like a team CZW, which was like Necro Butcher and Toby Klein and a bunch of guys like that. And the character of this redneck, barefoot, crazy, West Virginian Southern boy living out in the hills, but now as a wrestler, and kind of appealed to Darren, and he decided to choose Necro for that match, and they came up with the concept of a CZW style matchup that they wanted to put in there, and just to show Mickey's character in a different light, that hey, there is this side of wrestling, because it's out there, there are people that try to do it, but this is the big show that's there, and it wasn't bad. It was good exposure, if you think about it, because all exposure is good exposure, whether it's positive, negative, exposure is exposure. I'm not a very popular person. A lot of people don't like me, don't like my wrestling, but you know what? Everybody's talking about me. That's all I care about. keep my name in your mouth. I'm important. You're making me important, whether you like me or you don't. Villains are, I'm predominantly booked as a heel. People don't like me, but I know what my job is, and I'm not out here to be flashy and all that stuff. I'm out here to get heat and make people not like me. And I think that the wrestler kind of did that, where some fans go, oh, that was awesome, and some fans go, oh, that's what CZW is, and it just really depends on your taste. So, like me, I like hardcore wrestling. It entertains me, it's it's one of those things I've always been entertained by, but some people are different. They come from a different place, different culture, different society, and it's just how it is.
So you operate a wrestling company, you're a professional wrestler, and you have a fiance. Do you have time for anything outside of pro wrestling? Like, what is DJ Hyde's passions outside the business?
Now? Pretty much my days now revolve around me. Well, my grandmother lives with me, and she's not doing very well, so I take care of her a lot. Pretty much most of my days are, today I'm speaking to you guys. After this, I'm going to make DVDs. Somewhere in between there, I might get some food and head to the gym, or I may not head to the gym because my back has been bothering me since Germany, but it's actually feeling pretty good today, so... And then about, 5, 6 o'clock, I head to the wrestling school. I'm usually there, Monday through Thursday, 6:30 to 10. There may be a day where I might not be able to be there because I have other, personal things to do at night. But I go up there. Fridays, I either leave to go to my fiance's or, I'm at a wrestling show. Like this Friday, I will tomorrow morning, which today is Thursday. Sorry if I'm giving that away. But tomorrow morning, I will get up, take a shower, shave my body, which will take me a good hour just in itself. Drive to Sammy Callahan's house, which is about an hour from me. Meet up with him, Rich Swann, and Masada. Drive 5-6 hours to 2CW, which is a promotion we're wrestling for this weekend, Friday and Saturday. Go, set up, do the show. Probably afterwards, we'll probably go get some dinner, go to the hotel, sleep, get up, do it again. then after the show on Saturday, drive home, probably get back to Sammy's, I'd say about 4 in the morning, drive from there to my fiance's, who was 2 hours from him and also 2 hours from me. Go there, sleep, get up Sunday, do whatever, you know, whatever she wants to do that makes her happy. And, you know, I think we're doing some Christmas lights thing or something, I don't know. Do that, sleep there, come home, drive home at probably like 7 in the morning, get home at 9, throw everything in the wash and, you know, do whatever I did from the weekend, get some food, head to the gym, go back, do the same routine, head to the school. And that's probably pretty much my life. I don't really, you know, I don't really have friends outside of wrestling anymore. I mean, I do, like, I have those lifelong, but I don't see them very often. I don't really see my family. It's weird when you don't have a wrestling weekend off. You have, you know, like Thanksgiving weekend. I originally was booked for a show, but the show, I guess they canceled it or something. I don't know what exactly happened, but it's like I'm not doing anything, so I don't know what to do with myself. So, I mean, and then, you know, when I do have free time, you know, I'm answering emails or Facebooks. I mean, the amount of email I get is ridiculous. I mean, I get about 5 to 10 guys a day just looking to be booked on a show. And then you get, you know, there's all kinds of other stuff, people that want to do interviews. And there are some places like you guys that are very professional and like, hey, I'd love to come on. I'd love to do as much stuff as I can. But you get these guys that they have no clue what they're doing. You know, it's like guys would be like, yo, brother, what's up? You know, and when I talk as DJ, like the promoter, like I am pretty much in this interview, and as myself, I don't want to be approached like people know me and right. Like, hey, I'm a promoter. We're here for business. I'm not here for anything else. And if you come at me that way, I'm automatically going to shut you down because that's just not how that tells me something about you right away that I don't want to work with you, that I don't really care to do business with you because I know this is not going to be something that's done correctly. And it's one of those things that's pretty much my day. You know, there's some days where, you know, you just sleep all day and, you know, I got back from Europe. I was pretty jet lagged. You know, I spent like 3 weeks over there. So it was, you know, you're on no sleep over there and you're just like, you come home and after you've done, you know, 20 shows in like, I don't know, like 26 days or something like that, something ridiculous. You get tired and then, you know, over there, what time is it here? And, you know, if it's like 1 o'clock here over there, it's like, you know, 6, 7 o'clock at night. And,
right.
You know, you got to adjust to that or like after, like, you know, you deal with things like, here's an example. My next tour of Japan is 2 days after Christmas. So I'm not here until the week of the CZW show in January, which means I'm not here for New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to deal with that, you know, I mean, and in between, you know, I'm calling places, calling people, talking to them, trying to get things done. And, you know, like today, the T-shirt guy who makes all of our T-shirts and, you know, posters and all that stuff, the stuff isn't done yet. So where the hell is it? You know, I got to call him and, you know, complain about that, you know. It's constant, but you know, you have those downtimes where you sit around and you're doing nothing and you're playing video games or watching DVDs or, you know, something. I mean, if there are guys that, you know, I remotely may have an interest in, you know, I'll sit and watch their stuff. Or, you know, I watch pretty much CZW shows all the time. They go, okay, well, we dropped the ball here. What can I improve on here
mm-hmm.
as a booker and promoter? What can we change? Like, one of the biggest things that I would like to change going into the next year is atmosphere. I think CZW does, as I will tell you that, in my opinion, and fans, this is my opinion, we have the best product on the day. But I see other promotions that their product is not so good, but their atmosphere is amazing. Chikar is a perfect example of that. I mean, I think Chikar, while the wrestling does not compare to what we do in the product, I mean, as a wrestling-wise, because they don't really do wrestling there, but their atmosphere and their entertainment factor is amazing. I mean, it's second to none. It's they know how to create atmosphere, and that is a big thing to a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's pretty much my day. I mean, I make DVDs because all the CZW DVDs are made by myself. I make them here in my house, and I have an office that does all that crap, which is pretty much what I'm going to be doing this afternoon. So Yeah, that's my life. Wrestling is my life. I don't know anything other than that. You know, I might go back to getting a regular job because at some point I'm going to need benefits and things like that. But other than that, it's you wake up and you wrestle.
Well, you maintain a very good website, czwrestling.com, and has all the details about the CZW shows that you run. But where can people go to find out more information about your schedule? Do you have a Twitter account, a Facebook page?
Yes, we're at officialczw@facebook.com. And on Twitter, you can follow us at Combat Zone.
Excellent.
We have it all. We have Facebooks, Twitters, LinkedIn. I don't know what the LinkedIn account is. I can't remember. So
I have one.
We have all kinds.
I don't use it.
I have one, too. I set it up. I don't particularly use it either.
Now, don't forget that CZW has several upcoming big events, the first of which is December 8th, 2012, the Cage of Death 14. It'll be streamed live on Internet pay-per-view. Main event will be DJ Hyde versus Matt Tremont in the Cage of Death. Check it out. We want to thank you so much, DJ, for being here with us today. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Take care, and good luck on December 8th.
Thank you.
Alex, that was an excellent interview with DJ. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
I did, and man, Cage of Death is going to be a big show filled with a buffet, as DJ Hyde likes to call it. I think that WrestleCon is going to be huge, and hopefully we can get some more involvees of WrestleCon leading up to those shows.
Definitely. All right, now don't forget to check out the OWW website at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on post episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM for all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Very special thank you again to DJ Hyde, owner of Combat Zone Wrestling, for joining us here today. A really interesting conversation. We enjoyed having him on the program. And until next time, I am David.
This is Alex.
We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.